yeshiva circles, yard sites don't play the same role that they do like by the Hasidim. In fact, we have a family yard site is a yard site, and the neshama has an aliyah that day. But when we think of especially people who had effect on Klal Yisrael like the Rambam did, we think about not the personal day of his patira, of his passing, but the fact that when he died, there was no longer that active role that he played in Klal Yisrael. But he's played a great role since. In fact, this idea of a yard site, there was a great Gadol Rav Gusman, who was on Rav Chaim Moshe's Bezdin, and when he used to teach Bava Basra on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph and Bava Basra, Rashi stopped because it said Kan Meis Rashi. Rashi died on when he was explaining, while he was writing his Pirush on Bava Basra and also on Makkos. So Rav Gusman used to say that in my mind, the real yard site of Rashi is Chav Tes Amud Aleph. That's his yard site. The day that he no longer was giving over to Torah. So the Rambam himself, Rambam and Rashi as it happens, were probably the two Rishonim who generated the most Torah to be written because of their works. Rashi probably even more than the Rambam. It could be figured out exactly how many Sforim written. On Rambam alone, there's an excess on many parts of Rambam of 3,000 and 4,000 Sforim just written on the Rambam itself, which is an amazing thing. Right? Besides other Sforim that were written on other topics where they quote the Rambam, which is tens and tens of thousands of Sforim. But the Sforim that were written just on Rambam itself was over 3,000 Sforim. You know, and Rashi, the amount of Torah that these people generated is phenomenal. Just beyond description. And I'm going to share with you a couple of thoughts from the Rambam that are relevant to our lives. The Rambam formulated his Sefer on Halacha, the Mishnah Torah, and he put it into 14 different Svarim. 14 Svarim. That's why it's called the Yad. Yud Dalet is 14 Svarim. There's a lot of theories why the Rambam broke down all the halachos of the Torah into 14 Svarim. One theory of the Avakon has, which I think is interesting, is that the Rambam had a brother who supported him named David. And he writes, and his brother died in a shipping accident. He writes he was depressed for 8 years. He was exceptionally close with him. He supported him. And the gematria of David is Yudalit, is 14. That may have been a way for him to remember, because he talks about him in his letters with great warmth and his closest relationship. One of the Sforim that the Rambam wrote is called Sefer Ahava, which is a Sefer, which literally means a Sefer of love. And the Rambam, in the beginning of the Yad HaChazaka, the Mishnah Torah, he says, all the mitzvahs that I put into this Sefer are mitzvahs that you do all the time. Kriya Shema, Tefillah, Tefillin, Birchas Kayanim, Tzitzis, brachos and mila. And he even says, why do you do mila all the time? Because the Gemara tells us in Menachos that even though the act of mila only happens once, but the simen that a person is gemalt is something which is a sign in our lives permanently. In fact, interestingly enough, the Sipurna says that the reason why the Torah said that you shouldn't do tattoos is because a Jew has one sign that he's a Jew, mila. Tattoos are making new signs. There's no other sign. I didn't know that I needed that reason. I don't know, somehow tattoos just don't speak to me. But when I go around the world, it looks like the people that speak a lot. I don't get it. But the supporter says the idea of a tattoo is that you're making a statement, a simon, who I am, by what your tattoo says. It says, our simon is bris mila. So the Rambam formulates these mitzvahs as mitzvahs are called tmidius. They're all the time. And in fact, he even has a pasuk at the beginning of each of his svarim, and his pasuk for the sefer of Ava is Ma Ahavti Sarasecha, how much I love your Torah. Why? Because Kol Hayom is Yichasi, because every day I learn the Torah. Whatever you do all the time brings the Ahava. And this is true of Avas Hashem. How does a Jew have Ava for Hashem? Because the Rambam talks about, because he worships Hashem all the time. He davens to him all the time. He says Krishna all the time. He learns his Torah all the time. That's how a person has the Ava. Ava comes from tmidius, from consistency, from day in, day out. And the same, in fact, we say in Kedusha on Shabbos, V'yochein am ha-biyachad im shmo, erev avoker b'chol yom tamid, evening and morning, every day, all the time, pamayim bi'ahava, shma imrim. Why is it ahava? Because it's all the time. And this concept is not just true about Avas Hashem, it's true by Avas Yisrael, it's true by Avas Ish and Ishtai, it's true by husband and wife, that it's the day-to-day actions that people do that bring real Ava. We live in a world today where they have a cheap way out of showing Ava. That cheap way is called anniversaries, birthdays, Father's Day, Mother's Day. Make no mistake, if you celebrate birthdays, don't walk out of here and say you shouldn't. Celebrate them. If you celebrate Father's Day, Mother's Day, celebrate them. Right? If you celebrate anniversaries, celebrate it. But know that that's small potatoes. Real Ahava is day-to-day giving. That's where real Ahava comes from. It's easy to give a big gift once a year, twice a year, whenever they make it. But if people do constant small things on a daily basis, that's a deeper sign of Ahava, of love, than the big ticket items of those special days. So I'm not here to tell you not to celebrate your anniversaries or birthdays. Celebrate them and give the gifts. But remember, if you really want to have Ava, do day-to-day things. The small text in the middle of the day of how you're doing, the washing the dishes and surprising your wife, a tiny gift for no reason. And this is true in all forms of Avodas Hashem. That is the day-to-day actions of life, And the struggles that produces real, genuine life. The Gemara tells us a story in Avodah Zarah that there was this man named Ketia Bar Shalom who was an officer by the king, and the king wanted to destroy the Jews, and this officer told him that the Jews are indestructible, and he brought him a pasuk, and the king said he's going to kill Ketia Bar Shalom for saying this. And right before he killed him, he quickly gave himself a bris milah. Then they killed him. And a baskal came out and said, Ketia Bar Shalom is mezumen l'chaye olam haba. That this man is going to merit olam haba. Because he stood up to the king at the sacrifice of a life to say, Jews cannot be destroyed. And then the Gemara goes on to tell us, Ahok HaBachar Rebbe. So Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, cried when the baskal came out to say that Ketia Bar Shalom is getting into Olam Haba. And Rebbe cried. Why? He says, because some people take a lifetime to get Olam Haba, and he got an Olam Haba for one day's work. So the Mashah has a problem with this Gemara. Why did Rebbe cry? This was a moment of great simcha. Here was a guy who was not going to get Olam Haba, who stood up in principle for the importance of the Jewish people, and he got a ticket to Olam Haba. It should be a time of happiness. So why did Rabbeinu HaKadosh cry now? Let him cry for us that we have to struggle day in, day out with all types of tests and tribulations to get Olam Haba. So the Mashal teaches us an important lesson, that he was actually crying for this person. Now it's true that Ketia Bar Shalom merited Olam Haba through one act of great self-sacrifice, and he got a ticket to Olam Haba. But because he didn't live a full life of doing mitzvahs all the time, the ticket that he got to Olam Haba was a bleacher ticket. It was in the end zone. It wasn't on the 50-yard line. It wasn't a box seat. And he says, the Gemara indicates this. Yesh kaine olamoi. Some people get their olam haba. B'shah achas. From one day of struggle. Yesh kaine olamo. B'kama shanim. He felt bad for him. Yes, he got into Olam Haba, but for an empty life that had a moment of success. But if people struggle day in, day out, to go to shul, daven, try to learn, do chesed, have all kinds of trials and tribulations and challenges day in, day out, that's where you get a box seat. That's where you really grow. So he was actually crying for him. And the Gemara tells this story over, the same thing with Elazar ben Dardoy. He was a person who visited every house of ill repute until one day he did tshuva. And he died. But his whole life was empty. So Rebbe cried for him too. He did tshuva. He got into Olam Haba, but way in the back. But if a person has day-to-day struggles, and sometimes we make it, sometimes we don't. Hashem knows that too. But working at things on a daily basis, giving on a daily basis, being committed to our friends, our children, our spouses, our shul on a daily basis, when it's not just the exciting moment of an anniversary or something, that's where real growth is. So when a person looks at his life and sees different situations that come up, and you wonder, like, why did Hashem give us these challenges? Right? The Torah way to look at it is the challenges you get are there for your benefit. Because struggling through life and trying to always be better is where the real reward comes from. But moments of glory, which are nice, is not the whole story. And this idea, the Gemara tells us in Megillah that the reason why the Torah counted all the years of Yishmael is because by counting the years of Yishmael, the Gemara says, we're able to figure out the years of Yaakov Avinu. Otherwise, the Torah wouldn't tell us how many years Yishmael lived, but then you can figure out from the Psukim exactly how long Yaakov lived. The Marshal there asked the question, well, maybe we should consider the years of Yishmael in the Torah because at the end of his life he did tshuva according to the Medrash. So the Marshal says the same idea. The years of Yishmael were empty. If at the end he did tshuva, he didn't have a full life. And since he didn't have a full life, his years could only be counted because of Yaakov. Right? See, the idea that life is about the day-in-day struggles of life itself and going through difficulties and the difference that it makes. My own father, Zichrono Livracha, who helped build the yeshiva, was a 13-year-old boy in Germany when his father passed away. And he had a 23-year-old brother. They were both from an upstanding Shomer Shabbos family. And my grandfather passed away suddenly in 1931. We're talking about almost 100 years ago. And my uncle was so devastated that his father passed away. He was in college at the time. And he decided that he's not going to stay religious. And, you know, he gave things up. My father and him stayed close to their whole lives. When he was 75 years old, he became a Baal Teshuva. But his children were not only not religious, some married out. Can you imagine? I was sitting next to somebody, and they just announced that the Supreme Court of England on the radio had decided that England has a right to leave Brexit. The Supreme Court was a challenge to the Supreme Court. Could they leave the European Union or not? And the decision was made that they could. And the decision was written by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And the guy turns to me and says, you'll never believe what the guy's name is. The guy's name was David Neuberger. I said, and you wouldn't believe that he's my first cousin. His father and my father were brothers. But he's not religious. And if you look in his bio, you can look it up online, he writes in his bio proudly that my uncle was the president of a rabbinical college in Baltimore because he knew that his father, at the end of his life, when he was 75, said, "I made a mistake." And when my father saw that his brother left Yiddishkeit, he decided that he has to go the extra mile, and he and five or six boys, which was unheard of in 1936, left Germany and went to Poland to study in the Mir Yeshiva. And then, 2 years later, right before Hitler came to power, cousins brought him to America, and he ended up in our yeshiva as a student. And later, as Rabbi Luderman's brother-in-law. And my father and uncle kept up all the years, and my uncle looked back at his life. He was a professor. He used to have tea with the Queen. He reached one level under Sir, called Commander of the British Empire. He used to lecture in Harvard and Yale. And he looked at his life back as a great scientist, in that he made a poor choice. And from age 75 to 91, he kept Shabbos and kosher, and his kids thought it was crazy, because they didn't grow up that way. Two brothers made decisions, and the way their paths, and they stayed close all the years. He used to come to our bar mitzvahs, came to our weddings, right? But he lived a totally secular life. He was involved in Hebrew University, you know, but, and then after his mother passed away, he realized he made a mistake, became a Shomer Shabbos, and he did tshuva, but doesn't have any religious grandchildren whatsoever. People make choices, and the choices we make, and the differences it makes in our lives, and in our children's lives. Whatever struggles we have to do to stay strong and to get better in serving Hashem, the day-to-day grind of life, not just the special moments, right? But the day-to-day grind of life, that's where it's at. That's what makes life special. And that's a Torah value. That's a value that the Rambam tells us. That's love. That's loving Hashem. That's loving your fellow Jew. That's loving your family. Put in effort all the time. It can be small things, but it's effort. And that effort makes a big difference. That's a lesson we have from the Rambam. The Rambam talks about this concept of doing things all the time. He talks about in Hilchos Brachos, the more brachos you make, the better. The more times you go through the door, and you look at the mezuzah and say, Hashem is in control. All those small moments of identifying with truth, with emes, is far greater strength and gives far greater rewards than just moments of valor. A person can be called a moment of valor too, but it's the day-to-day struggle of life and doing special things that makes our lives special. That's a lesson from the Rambam, and imagine the special life that the Rambam lived, and that today his Torah is studied. They recently found, 20 years ago, a letter from the Rambam. This was found by not, you know, such religious people. They found a letter where he wrote that everything that I wrote in philosophy came from one-time reading of the philosophical works that I studied. But what I wrote in halacha, in the Rambam, is because I spent going over Gemara again and again my whole life. Rambam was such a genius that even the one-time read of all the philosophy that he read was enough to produce volumes of the Gemara Nevuchim and, you know, philosophical works. But his day-to-day input in life was the Tayag Mitzvahs, learning the Torah. And he writes in a place, whenever he writes in the end of Pilchus, in Sechtes Brachas and Birshnais, whenever I can talk about belief in Hashem, that is my passion. That's what I enjoy doing more than anything else. He named his son after Avraham Avinu because he was consumed with his love for Avraham Avinu, for his understanding of what it was to go against the whole world and stand up for truth and do that. And that's why he named his son Avraham, Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam, after Avraham Avinu, his role model. We should all look at our day-to-day lives and saying, that is richness and texture by trying to make every day meaningful with small acts of kindness, with 5 minutes extra of learning, with caring for other people. Not big deals, small things. One of the Bali Musa used to say that big people like to do small things all the time. Small people like to do big things sometimes. We should want to be big people and think about doing small things all the time. For that, we will have a much richer and productive and satisfying life by realizing that the day-to-day small things aren't small at all. That's life itself. Ubacharta b'chaim, choose life. Choose day-to-day strength of doing something good. Like you're doing now, to come learn, take off a day that you're off from work, come to learn, that's great. But every day, find something extra to do. The Altar of Kalm's Yeshiva, at the end of the second Seder, they used to give a clap. And everybody closed their gemaras. And for 5 minutes, each and every person had to pick something that they would learn that day for 5 minutes. One person picked Kisser Shonar, some people picked Nach, Bishnayas, whatever they picked. And you could only learn that subject for 5 minutes a day. And what was the reason for this 5 minute Seder? For this 5 minutes every day to learn something special? At the end of the year, you look back and said, look what I could have accomplished, how much I did through 5 minutes a day. By just learning a particular subject, whatever you pick, for 5 minutes, at the end of the year, you look back and say, look how much I gained. So it taught them the importance of time. It taught them the value of learning and how in 5 minutes a day of extra learning you can become a master in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, no Navi, become, you know, do something that you enjoy for 5 minutes. That's 5 minutes of daily learning, which sounds small, but it's really big because it's a daily thing. That's the message of this Rambam, and it should be a source for the Shem of the Rambam, who we you know, our beliefs and hashkafas are all molded by the great Rambam. And he should continue to study from his words, and he should continue to inspire us.
Was the Rambam influenced by secular wisdom?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, he was. He talks about it. It's talked about, yes. I know he did not see that as his main thrust, but he had, he said something about Shadim, you know, these spirits that they may not exist, and the Vilna Gaon writes that he was influenced by secular readings. And the same Vilna Gaon was so impressed with the Rambam that when they came to the Vilna Gaon and told him that the Rambam's philosophical work, Mamre Nevuchim, was being studied in Vilna, so people thought, well, since the Vilna Gaon disagreed with the Rambam about Shadim, that he wouldn't be happy that they're studying his work. And he said the Rambam was so big that after 120 years, the Vilna Gaon says, I hope I can be somewhere near the mechitza of where the Rambam's going to be in Olam Haba, because how great the Rambam was. So he had a difference of opinion in an aspect, but saw the totality of the Rambam as so great and special that he craved to be, his neshama should be nearer than the neshama of the Rambam.
Rebbe mentioned the concept of the day in and day out brings the Ahava. So how do we make our marriage not stale when it's the day in and day out? Like that we know in Hilchos Nida, you need the time off. How do we make sure that's not stale? When is that good to take off, and when is it?
Somebody was sitting with Chatzko Levenstein, Mashgiach of in Mir and Panovich. He was the Rebbe of our Rebbe of the Krungless, and it was the fourth day of this fellow's Shever Brachas. So Chatzko Levenstein turned to this Bacher and he said to him, so tell me, how's your Shalom Bias? How are you getting along with your wife? So the guy started laughing. He says, I'm married 4 days and you're asking me how I'm getting along? So Chatzko Levenstein said, I'm married 53 years, and I make a cheshbon every day of how I'm doing with my wife. I love telling you over this story because sometimes I make the same cheshbon when I say it over at least. And I'm a 50-year veteran. Right? So the truth is, right, it's If you want to make sure it's not stale, then you think, you go into your mind and think, what are her needs? Not your needs, her needs. What does she need? Right? And it can be a tiny thing that you could do. A tiny thing that you could do. The other day, there was a cousin of my wife that passed away suddenly, not a close cousin, and she wasn't able to go to Menachem Avon, and she was at loss of what, you know, to write to these cousins. So I remembered a couple things, and I was going out of town that day. My wife left the house, and I just sat down and jotted down a couple ideas for her. A small thing. I left it for her so that she should have what to write. Right? It was a tiny thing. It took me 2 minutes. Just 2 minutes. Right? And she didn't ask me for it. But I knew that she would appreciate it. I did it. And I did it not because I was going to be speaking here now. Yes?
I've been a therapist for many years, and I couldn't possibly agree more with what you're saying about the importance of the little things on a daily basis. Over the years, I've developed certain methods to facilitate that. One of them that seems to work well when done is when you get home from work, assuming you're about work, come home.
We work too.
You spend 5 minutes, or even less, sitting in the car before you go into the house, but whatever the circumstances, before you go into the house, you spend 5 minutes thinking about what you want to be thinking about the evening when you go to bed. Think at the beginning, what do I want to be feeling about how this evening went? Do I want to be playing with my kids? Do I want to be nice to my wife? Do I want to, you know, because you're deciding that now by the way you walk in. That's borrowing confidence. You're deciding it at the beginning, but most people don't realize it. Most people walk into it. I think somehow it has to start there. Well, I just like to think back when it starts. And it gives the person a chance to think.
Right. Excellent idea. And there are similar ideas like that. That there's a medrash that says that if you go to sleep every night and you think right before you go to sleep that tomorrow I'm going to give someone a compliment, and you make up your mind before you go to sleep, it's a medrash in Mishlei, I'm going to give somebody a compliment, and it could be your own wife, right, as well, then there's a special schus in Gan Eden for such people who go to sleep that way. The idea being is that before you're giving your neshama back to Hashem, you're ending your day on a positive thought. Tomorrow I'm going to do a chesed with somebody. And if you think that, right, then the more ideas you come up with, to answer the question even more is the mashal, there's another mashal that tells us that any b'der shalom roseleilich malichma, so anything you want in life, they guide you to do it. B'derech, listen to the words of the Chazal, b'derech shalom roseleilich, and any way a person wants to go, malichma, so they guide you. Who guides you? It can't be Hashem, because then I'm going to say He guides you. So the Mashal says, you know who guides you? Every positive thought, you can create a malach, an angel. And every positive word, you create a stronger angel. And every positive action, an even stronger angel. If somebody put a gun to my head right this minute and said, get a hold of marijuana, I would not know how to do it. I have no interest. I don't know how to do it. But people that have interest find it. How come? Because if you think about it, talk about it, desire it, you create those malachim, negative malachim, that help you find things that will hurt you. If you think positively, I want to do something good for my wife and kids today. I gave a compliment. I did a small action. Those malachim will help you find ways to do things all the time. In other words, we're more powerful than we think. Hashem gave us an neshama that can create these powerful malachim, but we have to put in the efforts ourselves. Thinking about it, talking about it, doing small things, opportunities will arise. And Hashem helps you when you do the right things. That time I just tell you an interesting Gemara with an idea that shows this. I'm going to tell you, the Gemara gives advice about real estate. The Gemara says, if a person checks on his real estate every day, Gemara says in Chulin, he will earn money every day. So one man, Yama, the Gemara said, I checked on my real estate every day, and I didn't earn any money. So the Gemara says, one day he comes to his field, and he had lots of vegetables growing there. And when he came to the field, a water main broke and almost inundated his entire crop, and we have lost all his money. But because he was on the field that day, he quickly went, got shmatis, and called people, filled the water main and saved all of his crop. So Mara says he learned now that if you come to your property every day, you'll make money. So the Mara asks a simple question. He said, how does it prove anything? The guy came at 10 o'clock in the morning and the water main broke. had he come at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and the water main broke at 10 o'clock in the morning, he would have lost the field. So how do you see that by coming every day that you make money? So the Maharal says, the Gemara is teaching you the following lesson. If you do what you're supposed to do by coming every day, the day that the water main was supposed to break, Hashem will make it break at the time that you're there. Because you did the right work by coming all the time. So sometimes you can do things where you don't see any fruits of your labor, but if you're doing the right thing, then the right things will happen. You get an extra source. That's just for financial things. That's not even for anything spiritual. Just to save money, you have to go. You own the property. You've got to take care of it. So go daily. Do it. And then you'll be helped that if the water main has to break, it'll break at the time that you come. And the same thing is true in the spiritual, which marriage is. You want it to be better, it will be better if you do the right things. And if you really want to do the right things, Hashem will help us find the right things to do.
Any other questions?
Is there ever a time where a husband is supposed to be guiding his wife in the ruchnias level?
By example. More than by... it's not the job of a wife or a husband to be mashgiach of the other person. But if we live on a higher plane ourselves, then over time it rubs off both ways. As long as we treat each other well and then we are looking to improve our own spiritual level, that itself, by treating each other well, will give more guidance than sermonizing to a spouse. Sermonizing is not what does it. Example does it.
In chinuch, there's so many things that parents keep in mind, the techniques to help with their children, you mechanech them. What would Rabbi suggest would be the top one or two things that parents need to always focus on when they're being mechanech their children?
Seeing, number one, seeing respect for one another. When kids see their parents respect one another and talk about one another positively, right, then that gives the kids a sense of security in life. Because if the two most important people in your life are a team, then the child can feel much more secure about life. If the two most important people are not a team, then the child innately feels insecure, because if my own parents aren't happy with each other, who says I'm going to be happy with somebody else either? Then they don't gain the same confidence that they can do it as well. So I think showing respect and appreciation for one another does more than anything else. And the best thing that we can do as parents is lead by example, not by giving them speeches, but by example. And people ask me, well, what do you tell your kids, like right before their marriage, you give them a charge? So I tell them that if you live the happy life together, you don't have to give them a speech. If you didn't live a happy life together, then the speech doesn't count. Mm-hmm. Right? So that doesn't mean that sometimes you can't tell a kid, you should work on a particular thing. But really, the charge you give your kids in life is the day-to-day happiness of your own home. Much more than anything that you're going to say. if a parent, if a father, let's say at the end of a Shabbos, will say to in front of to the table when it's not expected, or the end of the Yom Tov, said, "Mommy made, like, you know, between the guests we had and the kids at the house, Mommy made 30 meals over Shabbos, right? And it was great." When she wasn't expecting this, just said it out of the blue at the end of a Shabbos or Yom Tov, whenever it is, right? And the kids will get much more from that than the father and mother walking around holding hands. Because that's a genuine expression of appreciation for something somebody did. If a mother says when the father comes back from a business trip, you know, Daddy had to work hard to do this because he wants to support us, right? So saying that positiveness, right, will make the kids feel, you know, appreciation because we show appreciation to our spouses. That, I think, is the best thing you can do to raise healthy kids.
How do we balance our trying to make money, spending as much time in the office or the call or whatever your job is, and making sure you're there for your spouse?
The answer I'm going to say may sound like it sounds cute, but I'm not saying it for the fact that it sounds cute, because I believe it's correct what I'm saying. Anybody who's figured out how to do that and thinks that they have the right formula is doing something wrong. And I don't mean that to sound cute. In other words, if the balancing act of family, job, community, right, is such a difficult balance that we should be struggling with it all the time. Not in a pressured way, but in understanding that one week could be this way, one day can be this way, depending on the things going on. But to say that there is a accountant's formula, like, you know, there's certain accounting principles that people use, you know, for accounting, which I know are helpful. I use one of these accounting principles whenever I go to a Sheva Brachas. One of my talmidim who was an accountant told me there's a thing called LIFO, which is in materials, it's last in, first out. So when I go to Sheva Brachas, I'm the last one in and try to be the first one out, you know, if I have a busy schedule. But when it comes to this life itself, it's so hard to balance all the things that if you're struggling with it, then you're in better shape than if you have a formula of how to do it. So if that sounds like I don't mean it as a cop-out answer, and I don't mean it as a formula. I mean it as knowing the struggle is the best way to find the balance. But if you think you have it all worked out, that means then you're not being sensitive, because different times you have different needs that you have to do. When I had 6 or 7 little kids in the house, and I had no knowledge of cooking whatsoever, no interest in cooking, no enjoyment in cooking. But if we had a lot of little kids, my wife was nursing kids, and if I would come home during lunch and I would try to figure out to make something for supper, years ago when I was necessary to do it, I did it. Not because I enjoyed doing it, but because it was necessary, right? If, you know, if it was no longer necessary, then I didn't do it. But it was necessary, I did it, because, you know, so I can't say that my cooking talents were great, right? And I just, you know, took out chicken, put on some stuff, and, you know, put it in the oven. And my wife, we had twins, and my wife was nursing twins, and then came down, and supper was, you know, in the oven, because there was 5, 6 kids waiting for a supper. and I knew my wife didn't have the time. So, you know, you make shift when you have to do things. You can't, there's no easy way out, right? So, if I'm giving an unclear answer, I think that's the truth. It varies from day to day, time to time, couple to couple, and whatever's going on. But if you're struggling with it, then you're okay. If you got it all worked out, check it out because you're doing something wrong. I'm sure there's more good advice besides that, but this is something that I can personally relate to how I think of it. Somebody can maybe come up with something more concrete, but that's a reflection of my personal thinking.
What does Rebbe hold about chiba between the initial ishtai, touching, kissing, hugging in front of the children?
Right. I find that complimenting is much more effective. That's the easy way out. I often wonder when I see couples walking in the street holding hands. I've made this point to people, and when they think about it, they realize how correct it is. When they walk from the living room to the dining room, can they not get through the door because they're busy holding their hands? Or it's only when they go outside that they have to show everybody that we are a team, so therefore they have to act that way. But I wonder if they're walking in the house, I can't get through the door because we just have to hold hands, right? They don't do that. So is it public consumption? That's Pachozava. My experience is that when kids see parents compliment each other, respect each other, help each other, that shows much more ava than just the easy way out of kissing in public.
And if they're showing that ava through complimenting, is there an additional mila to a hug once in a while or touching once in a while? Nothing.
I don't know. I see many couples like myself that have many happily married kids that did not see that. And their kids are happy. They figured it out. Right? That's how I see it. And I don't know if everybody agrees with that, but that's how I see it. I don't think that's... I think that's like anniversary gifts. It's the easy way out. Not the real way out. But of course, it's important that kids should know that the parents care for each other. But they'll know it more by the respect than by that. That's just an easy way out. Do the real things.
Do you ever think there's a downside
in it? No, I don't see a downside. I don't see an upside. No. I don't see the upside. I don't see a downside, no. But I don't see an upside either. The upside, I think, is the respect. I grew up without sisters, and I have 7 daughters, Baruch Hashem, they're married. And whenever they would ask me, come to ask me, do you think this dress is appropriate? I would tell them, I don't know, but whatever mommy says, you can trust her, right? And 7 daughters later, my wife says, I still don't really get the girls, because I didn't grow up with sisters. Could be. But if I tell my kids, mommy knows what she says counts, so then I'm making a statement that, it's something I don't know about, and she does, and vice versa. She'll send the kids to me for something. That type of thing, when you do, it does more than that. But that takes thoughtfulness. That takes thinking about, right? Public acts like that doesn't take thinking. That's just mimicking ads and television, which is all sheker. All right? So I don't see the value. No. I don't consider myself an extremist, but I think that's what I'm saying makes sense. Yes?
Could Rabbi give us some fundamentals of just seeing the differences between where men's kaychas are more in tune with the truth and where women's kaychas are more in tune with the truth and how to use that to build a family and I don't remember. I've seen some chazals that seem to say that certain things men have a better handle on, some things women have a better handle on, and we should. And how to like? Where do we apply those things?
The Gemara tells over a story that one of the Sarvagi Malchus from Chanin ben Trajan, who was killed, said the Sarvagi Malchus happened because of Yosef being sold. But he did something that was his mistake, which was he was teaching his Talmidim the shame of Hashem, of Membeis Oisius, and he spoke it out to teach it. And the Gemara says, even though halacha, you're allowed to speak it out to teach it, but Hashem is medagdik with tzaddikim v'chut asayra, like a hare, that even though he was allowed to do it, he probably shouldn't have. So the Gemara says that he got killed, and his wife also was punished, because his wife should have said to him, why are you doing that? So the question is asked, you're married to the Gadol Hador, and he says you're allowed to do this, and the wife is supposed to question, why are you doing that? She didn't know to learn as much as he did. It means that there's a certain intuitiveness that a wife can have, that by just saying, are you sure that's the right thing to do? It's, you know, that whoever a person's wife is can have a certain sensitivity to their husband, no matter how big the husband is, to say, is that the appropriate thing? I remember many years ago I had a student who, in Beis Medrash, she had to be institutionalized because he was someone as a kid messed around with him, and he kept it in, and he just fell apart. And I used to go to visit him almost every day during lunch. And they couldn't figure out at the psychiatric ward what his problem was. And one day it just hit me that something must have happened to him. And I confronted him, and he opened up. And today the guy is a principal, a grandfather, and a very successful person who was hospitalized, you know, at the time. Really a successful guy. And he overcame his difficulty, etc. But I was so taken with this fellow's problem that, you know, I used to go, you know, almost daily to visit him in the hospital till he got better. And for Hashem, it was good results. But I remember one day, this happened 30 years ago, my wife turned to me and said, you're spending too much time with this Talmud. The kids need you at home more. And she was right. And she challenged me. She was right. So a wife can always look at a situation and say to a husband, or vice versa, you know, you're going too far. I want to tell you a story that happened to me last week. And I'll close with this story because it's a very, very moving story to me. I was at a wedding, and there was a fellow there who's not a student of our yeshiva, who I knew as a student of mine in camp many years ago, over 40 years ago. And this student married a girl of a student of mine, a sister. And the sister, because her son, her brother, was a close Talmud, used to come visit our house. So I knew both he and his wife. His wife, because she visited us, and she was a Baal Teshuva, and he, because he was, you know, I knew him from camp. And she was a difficult person. And he had a daughter. And she was giving him such a hard time over 40 years ago that he wanted to get divorced. And this particular thing, I didn't remember over the years having to do with this couple, but he tells me he was visiting from Israel. He came in. He was at the same wedding I was at. And he comes over to me and says, "You were very helpful to me over the years, but there's a particular story I have to tell you that you may not even remember." And it was so meaningful to me. He started crying and I started crying. He said, "After my daughter was born, she was giving me such a hard time that I wanted out. And you shook me and you said, 'You brought a child to this world and she's going to have a miserable life. You got to work your kishkas out to make this work.' Says, today, every one of my children is successful. I have many grandchildren. We have a wonderful marriage. I stuck it out. And it was so hard and I was ready to give up. And he gave me a hug for telling him, 'Don't give up.' And it was so meaningful to me that he could come 40 years later and say that a moment of getting Musar made a difference. And I can't tell you how meaningful it was to me that he said this, because I had a case not long ago of a couple that I tried keeping together, and then they ended up getting divorced, and one of the kids came to me and said, 'Why'd you let my parents stay married? We had so much tsaras. You win some, you lose some.' You know, we always try to keep people with shalom. But here, I was such a mensch that he remembered this conversation, which only after jarring my memory did I remember it, to be honest. But he said, 'And look at what I have today because of it.'" Right? It just shows you when people appreciate other people, the chizik he gives me to go on and try to help people, because you never know what positive things we can say to people and affect their lives in ways that can have great, great results. Everyone should have such simcha and togetherness in our own mishpachas.